Chapter 3 Mundane Houses. Planetary vibrations not only must have a point of departure, but also, if they are effective, must have a place of reception. A tone reverberating from the sounding board of one of the zodiacal signs must reach the Earth, in order to affect the destiny of the inhabitants of the Earth. To do this, it must penetrate the astral field associated with the Earth. The direction from which such a planetary vibration reaches a given spot on the Earth determines the relative direction of movement of the astral field penetrated, and also the amount of astral field through which it must pass. These two factors, it has been ascertained by observation, determine the department of life which the vibrations will influence. To ascertain the volume of planetary vibrations reaching the Earth from given directions, and the departments of life they influence, is our object in the study of mundane houses. In preceding lessons, I have compared the planetary vibrations to musical tones. In fact, I know of no better designation for them than planetary tones. Each planet sounds its own tone. The zodiacal signs I have compared to sounding boards, from which these tones resound. The tone is modified, not in its essential vibratory rate, but in tone quality, by the sounding board, or zodiacal sign, from which it reverberates. Furthermore, musical tones and planetary tones have both a point of departure and a place of reception, and the place of reception of planetary tones, so far as we are concerned, is the Earth, acting as a grand auditorium. In most auditoriums, due to distances from the instruments, to obstructions that may intervene, and to other acoustic factors, tones are not heard in the same volume, and with the same precision throughout all its sections. The Earth, as an auditorium, is unique, for the various musical instruments, the zodiacal signs, are ranged completely around the outside of it. Nevertheless, as in most auditoriums, the relation of a particular point in it to the positions where tones are being sounded modifies the tones at the place of reception. That is, tones coming from one direction are stronger and clearer than tones coming from another direction, because they have less of the astral field of the Earth to penetrate, and are less interfered with by its rotation, due to the turning of the Earth on its axis. It will thus be seen that persons occupying different portions of the terrestrial auditorium situated at different stations on the face of the Earth will not hear the tones from the celestial instruments with the same clarity. At any given time, some may be more favorably located than others for the reception of certain tones. Because in the case of the earthly auditorium, it seems to be the thickness or thinness of the astral field of the Earth at a given point, together with its movement, that determines the ease with which planetary tones reach a given point, we may compare the terrestrial auditorium to a building the walls of which are of varying thickness. At certain intervals there are doors, and at other intervals there are windows. Thus the musical instruments ranged around the outside easily find access for their tones through the wide open doors, find access with less ease through the windows, and reach the interior only with great difficulty through the denser portions of the walls. It is to map these sections of varying resistance that we have recourse to a diagram of the mundane houses. Thus, to map the amount of wall thickness and the tone modifications due to Earth rotation at any given spot on the surface of the Earth, that spot is taken as the center, about which, from west to east, is circumscribed a circle. This circle, commencing at the eastern horizon, is then divided into 12 equal segments. Mundane means pertaining to the Earth. A house is a dwelling place. A mundane house, then, is the dwelling place of a celestial influence at any moment of time, considered solely from the point on the Earth where the influence is received. Each of the 12 equal segments of the circle about the Earth from west to east is a mundane house. A clearer conception of the mundane houses may be had by facing the south and imagining oneself the hub of a great wheel, the circumference of which passes directly from the horizon in the east, on the left, under one's feet around to the horizon in the west, on the right, from thence directly overhead, and back to the eastern horizon again. Let one then imagine this great wheel to possess 12 spokes radiating into the sky from the point where one stands as a center, these spokes equally spaced about the wheel. Such a wheel accurately pictures the 12 houses of a horoscope, the dividing line between two houses, called a house cusp. being represented by each spoke. The first spoke in this great wheel is occupied by the horizon directly to the east of where one stands. The eastern horizon, then, is the cusp of the first house. This is a very important point in a horoscope, and because it is at this place that the planets rise from below the horizon into view, it is called the ascendant. The opposite horizon, directly to the west of the observer, representing the seventh spoke of the great wheel, is the cusp of the seventh house. Because it is the point where the planets sink from view below the western horizon, it is called the descendant. The point directly beneath one's feet, representing the fourth spoke of the great wheel, is the cusp of the fourth house. Because it is the lowest point, it is called the nadir. The point directly overhead, the zenith, representing the tenth spoke of the great wheel, is the cusp of the tenth house. This is also a very important point in a horoscope, for it is here that a planet reaches its greatest elevation. It is called the midheaven, or more often abbreviated from its Latin equivalent, medium coeli, and merely termed the MC. These four spokes divide the earthly auditorium into four quadrants. At sunrise, the sun is exactly on the cusp of the ascendant. At midnight, the sun is exactly on the cusp of the nadir. At sunset, the sun is exactly on the cusp of the descendant. At noon, the sun is exactly on the cusp of the MCC diagram, page 18. Because we have northern latitudes, must look south to view the sun or a planet when it is on the MC. The cusp of the 10th house is also called the south point. And because the nadir, abbreviated from the Latin imam coeli as IC, is opposite the south point, it is sometimes called the north point. The four points, usk, MC, desk, and nadir, are the strongest points in the horoscope in the sense that a greater volume of energy reaches the earth from a planet when it is located near one of these points than when it is located in any other section of the heavens. This is not difficult to demonstrate experimentally. It is as if at other stations there were walls of varying thickness, but at these points the doors were wide open, so that the planetary tones may enter the auditorium without interference. Now, as the zodiacal signs are each 30 degrees in extent, and the houses of the horoscope are also a 30 degrees expanse, at first thought it might be assumed that the equivalent of one sign, or 30 degrees of the zodiac, always occupies exactly one mundane house. This certainly would be the case if the circle of mundane houses coincided with the zodiac. However, it does not coincide with the zodiac. Except at the equator, the mundane houses are to the north or to the south of the main position of the zodiac. The effect of thus being to the north or to the south of the equator in its extreme influence is familiar to us in the accounts of Arctic explorers who witness a midnight sun. In such a case, the degree of the zodiac occupied by the sun does not, during the 24 hours, pass into any of the six houses below the horizon. This midnight sun, as well as the phenomenon of 6 months daylight followed by 6 months darkness near the poles, is the result not merely of the observer occupying a high latitude, but also to the incident that the zodiac is inclined at an angle of over 23 degrees to the equator. That is, even at the equator, the zodiacal signs rise diagonally. The further to the north or to the south of the equator the observer moves, the more diagonally do the signs rise. Thus, in north temperate latitudes in summer, the sun appears on the horizon when it rises well north of east of the observer, and as it moves toward noon it swings up and to the south. The farther north the observer goes, the farther to the north the sun appears to rise in summer, until finally, in extreme north latitudes, it fails to set, merely circling around the north horizon from the west to the east at night without disappearing. Now, if you draw two parallel lines an inch apart, and then measure the distance between them diagonally instead of straight across, you will find that the diagonal line is much more than an inch. In fact, the more the diagonal inclines to the parallel lines, the longer it must be. Without entering into a technical explanation of the matter, it will be seen that if the zodiac rises diagonally, as it were, that it is necessary for some of the mundane houses of 30 degrees extent to contain more than 30 degrees of the zodiac. Furthermore, being true circles, if the zodiac is diagonal to the mundane houses at some points, relative to the zodiac the mundane houses are diagonal to it at other points. To state it more precisely, as there are 360 degrees in the zodiac and 360 degrees in the mundane houses. If more than 30 degrees of one section of the zodiac occupies one house, less than 30 degrees of some other section of the zodiac must occupy some other house. A technical explanation of the reason why, in making a chart of the heavens, more often than not some mundane houses will hold more than 30 degrees of the zodiac and others less than 30 degrees of the zodiac, would be out of place here. I trust, however, these remarks will give a general idea why it is that more than one zodiacal sign may, and often does, occupy one house of the horoscope. As the basis on which the tables of houses commonly employed are constructed is that each shall contain precisely 30 degrees, I trust also that it will be clear that so long as we employ such tables, each mundane house must be exactly 30 degrees in extent, irrespective of the number of degrees of the zodiac it holds. To make a map of the 12 mundane houses, the student should draw a circle and bisect it with a heavy horizontal line from left to right. This horizontal line represents the horizon, and the half of the circle above this line represents the visible portion of the heavens, all that is above the horizon. The half of the circle below this line represents the portion of the heavens that is invisible due to being below the horizon. Next, the circle should be bisected by a vertical line. All to the left of this line is eastward, and all to the right of this line is westward, from the observer. As to see the planets and the zodiac, we face the south, the top of the map is south, just the reverse of a geographical map. The four quadrants now mapped by the two intersecting lines should each be divided by two radii from the center of the map, thus dividing each into three equal sections. This gives a circle divided into 12 equal segments, see diagram, page 18, which should be numbered, commencing with the segment just below the eastern horizon as the first house, the next segment below it as the second house, etc. That energies of tremendous power, hitherto quite unrecognized, are pelting the Earth day and night from the regions of space, has been demonstrated by the discovery in 1925 of the cosmic ray. That such a force so powerful, that were its volume to increase it is believed it would constitute a serious menace to life upon the Earth should remain undiscovered so long, leads to the inevitable conclusion that there may be numerous other energies reaching and influencing the Earth as yet to be brought within the ken of material science. And one willing to investigate will find that a planet sending its rays to the Earth through a certain one of the mundane houses has an effect upon a different department of life than if its rays were received through any of the other houses. Consider for a moment that most of us feel differently than at other times, when the sun is in the third house from midnight to about 2 a.m. Physical vitality is low at this period, and more people die, so medical statistics state, during this interval than during any other. While the sun is in the second house from about 2 a.m. to near dawn, not merely the physical forces are sluggish, but the courage is low and the mind depressed. It is the zero hour. Yet with the coming of dawn, and from then to sunrise, while the sun is in the first house, there is a general awakening of life energies the world over. Immediately after sunrise there is a temporary lull, and yet a very different influence again in the period just preceding noon. I am here merely calling attention to conditions that are familiar to all who observe closely. The rotation of the Earth causes rays from the planets to meet with different densities of astral field, or with the astral field moving differently as they reach the Earth through the various mundane houses. In some manner this resistance offered by the Earth's astral field under the particular motion that obtains in each respective house causes whatever planetary energies that pass through the house to have a specific affinity with a section of a person's astral body, where are stored the thought cells relating to some special department of life. All the mechanical steps by which vibrations coming through one house influence chiefly one special department of life may not be theoretically clear. But for that matter, neither is it mechanically clear why the roots of a plant grow away from the sunlight and the stalk of the plant toward it. Yet we can prove they do so, and it is not a more difficult task to prove using the birth chart of the first person at hand that planetary energies reaching the Earth through a certain mundane house have an affinity for a certain department of life. The consideration of this relation between the mundane houses and the department of human life affected through each is the next matter to engage our attention. as we found the magical formula, Jodhi Vohi, of great assistance in studying the zodiacal signs, we shall also find it advantageous to apply it in a similar manner to the mundane houses. Even as the signs were found to separate into four equal groups of three signs each, so likewise the mundane houses separate into four trinities. The trinity of life embraces the first, fifth and ninth houses. The first house influences the constitution and vitality. The fifth house influences the life of the offspring. The ninth house influences the life in relation to religion and philosophy. This trinity corresponds to the fiery signs of the zodiac. The trinity of psychism embraces the fourth, eighth, and twelfth houses. The fourth house influences the home and the end of life. The eighth house influences death and inheritance. The twelfth house influences sorrows and imprisonment. This trinity corresponds to the watery signs of the zodiac. The trinity of wealth embraces the second, sixth, and tenth houses. The second house influences personal property. The sixth house influences labor and servants. The tenth house influences business and honor. This trinity corresponds to the earthy signs of the zodiac. The trinity of association embraces the third, seventh and eleventh houses. The third house influences the thoughts and the brethren. The seventh house influences partnership and marriage. The eleventh house influences hopes and friends. This trinity corresponds to the airy signs of the zodiac. Next we must consider the houses, as of three different volumes, each volume embracing four houses. The angular houses are the first, fourth, seventh, and tenth. These are of the strongest volume. It is as if there were wide open doors about the earthly auditorium at these stations, through which the full volume of planetary influence may enter unimpeded. They are called angular because their cusps, being directly upon the eastern and western horizons and upon the zenith and nadir, are the lines dividing the heavens into quadrants. The succeeding houses are the second, fifth, eighth, and eleventh. They are of moderate volume, as if there were but small windows in the earthly auditorium at these stations, through which celestial tones may enter only in reduced amounts. They are called succeeding because they succeed, or follow, the angular houses. The cadent houses are the third, sixth, ninth, and twelfth. These are of the least volume, as if at these stations about the earthly auditorium there were thick walls, through which the heavenly tones penetrate only as muffled sounds. They are called cadent, meaning to fall away, because they fall away from the other houses both in volume of influence and in position. Now we found that the zodiacal signs were divisible not only into three qualities, but also into three degrees of emanation. Likewise, we find that the mundane houses are divisible into three volumes, also into three societies. The personal houses embrace the 12th, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. They influence personal sorrows, the personal body, the personal property, the brethren and personal thoughts. These houses have to do with the private life. The companionship houses embrace the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. They influence the companionship in the home and at the end of life, the companionship in pleasure and with children, the companionship in work and with servants, and the companionship in partnership, in marriage, and in meeting the public. These houses have to do with closely contacting people. The public houses embrace the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. They influence the public life through deaths and legacies, through advertising and public utterances, through reputation and credit and through friends. These houses have to do with matters that become widely known. As a duality, the mundane houses may also be viewed in two different ways. They may be considered in relation to the facility with which their influence gains recognition. And they may be considered in relation to the waxing or the waning of their power. The six houses above the horizon 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th are positive, and tend to the ready expression of any influence found in them in such a way that it gains recognition. The six houses below the horizon 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th are negative and tend to the development of whatever influence is found in them in secrecy. The six houses on the east side of the chart 10th, 11th, 12th, 1st, 2nd, and third tend toward increase, and whatever influence is found in them inclines to further development. The six houses on the west side of the chart, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th tend toward decrease, and whatever influence is found in them inclines to dissolution. Having now discussed the mundane houses as a quaternary, a trinity, and as a duality, to complete our magical formula, 1-2-3-4=10, we have yet to consider them as a unity. The first house belongs to the trinity of life. It is an angular house, consequently transmits energy of the strongest volume. It is a personal house, related to the private life. Being below the horizon, its influences tend to develop in secret, but as it is on the east side of the chart, they develop persistently. It influences the health, the personal appearance, the temperament, such matters as cause changes in the form or location of the person, and in general the personality through which the character must express. The second house belongs to the trinity of wealth. It is a succeeding house, consequently transmits energy only in moderate volume. It is a personal house, related to the private possessions. Being below the horizon, these possessions are not open to public inspection, yet any influence expressing through this house tends to development. The tenth house represents the business, and the sixth house the labor involved, but the second house represents the fruits of these in terms of cash and other personal property. The third house belongs to the trinity of association. It is a cadent house, consequently transmits energy very weakly. It is a personal house, related to the private thoughts. Being below the horizon, these thoughts may never be expressed to others, but any influence in this house tends toward development. It influences the thoughts, which are the mental associates, the brethren, neighbors, writing, short journeys, correspondence, and education. The fourth house belongs to the trinity of psychism. It is an angular house, consequently transmits energy of the strongest volume. It is a companionship house, relating to those in the home. Being below the horizon, its influences tend to be kept from the public, and as it is on the west side of the chart, they have little power of growth. This house influences the parentage, the father in particular, the home and general domestic environment, inherited tendencies, real estate, hidden things, and the condition at the close of life. These things, as exerting a powerful influence on the unconscious life, are of psychic import. The fifth house belongs to the trinity of life. It is a succeeding house, consequently transmits energy only in moderate volume. It is a companionship house, relating to the companionship of children and the companionship in pleasure. Being below the horizon, its influence is not heralded to the public, nor do we expect any influence here to undergo great development. It rules broadly the life of the affections, of the children, and of the pleasures, governing speculation, amusements, offspring, and love affairs. The sixth house belongs to the trinity of wealth. It is a cadent house, consequently transmits energy very weakly. It is a companionship house, relating to servants and to those with whom one works. Being below the horizon, any influence here tends to be kept secret, and as it is on the west side of the chart, there is little opportunity for growth. It influences broadly those things that assist or hinder the acquisition of wealth, such as assimilation, illness, labor, inferiors, and servants. The seventh house belongs to the trinity of association. It is an angular house, consequently transmits energy of the strongest volume. It is a companionship house, relating to partnerships and marriage. Being above the horizon, its influences tend to gain wide recognition, although there is little growth from them. It governs the relations with the public, partnerships, open enemies, lawsuits, and marriage. The eighth house belongs to the trinity of psychism. It is a succeeding house, consequently transmits energy only in moderate volume. It is a public house, and the things it influences are kept secret with great difficulty. They do not, however, tend toward any great development. It influences the relations to the public's money, and to the money of the partner, also the relations to the dead, both their psychic influence and the inheritance from them. In addition to such legacies, it also influences the conditions surrounding the person's death. The ninth house belongs to the trinity of life. It is a cadent house, consequently transmits energy very weakly. It is a public house, having to do with the public expression of opinions. Being above the horizon, the things it influences tend to gain wide recognition. They do not, however, tend to continue development. This is the house ruling advertising, publishing, dreams, long journeys, philosophy, religion, and the public expression of ideas. The tenth house belongs to the trinity of wealth. It is an angular house, consequently transmits energy of the strongest volume. It is a public house, relating to the credit and honor. Being above the horizon, there is public recognition of the things it influences. These things are subject to much development. It influences the mother, the trade or profession, the business qualifications, superiors, credit, reputation, and the esteem in general with which one is held by others. It thus greatly influences material success. The 11th house belongs to the trinity of association. It is a succeeding house, consequently transmits energy only in moderate volume. It is a public house, and the things it influences are widely known. Being above the horizon, there is full recognition of all its affairs, and they are subject to persistent development. Its associations are occasional rather than constant. It governs acquaintances, friends, hopes, and wishes. In particular, it influences the attitude toward, and the benefit, that may be derived from, acquaintances. The 12th house belongs to the trinity of psychism. It is a cadent house, consequently transmits energy very weakly. It is a personal house, and its affairs are kept as secret as possible, although being above the horizon, the things it influences nevertheless gain some recognition. They also tend to persist in development. It influences secret enemies, sorrows, disappointments, restrictions, limitations, imprisonment, unseen forces, and the relation to astral entities. Now let us apply the magical quaternary, Jyoti Vohi, to the planets. They are naturally divisible into such a quaternary, because their energies affect four different phases of human life. Thus there are vital planets, intellectual planets, social planets, and business planets. The vital planets are the Sun and the Moon. The intellectual planets are Mercury and Uranus. The social planets are Venus, Mars, Neptune, and Pluto. The business planets are Saturn and Jupiter. The trinity into which the planets are divisible is based upon whether their usual effect upon human life is harmonious, discordant, or convertible. The harmonious planets are Jupiter and Venus. The discordant planets are Saturn and Mars. The convertible planets are Sun, Moon, Mercury, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. These convertible planets are not essentially harmonious or discordant, but may become either through the aspects received from other planets. As a duality, the planets are divisible into those that are electric and positive, and those that are magnetic and negative. The electric and positive planets are Sun, Mars, and Jupiter. The magnetic and negative planets are Moon, Venus, Saturn, Neptune, and Pluto. Uranus is neutral and electromagnetic. Mercury is either positive or negative according to its association with other planets, being but the mediumistic transmitter of the positiveness or the negativeness of the other planets. We have now discussed the planets as a quaternary, a trinity, and a duality, and to complete our 1-2-3-4, it remains to treat them as a unity. 1. The Sun is a vital planet, and a convertible planet, exerting either a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from the other planets. He is electric, masculine, and positive, hence in his influence he is majestic and commanding. In human anatomy he rules the heart, the vital center of life. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the heart is the dominant physical organ, its pulsations being the source of circulation which makes life possible, so he rules the electrical energies, on which the vitality depends. In his influence over the mind he rules the group of mental factors designated as the power urges, embracing pride, firmness, approbativeness, conscientiousness, and self-esteem. His influence is greater than that of any other planet, being proud, grand, firm, unbending, kindly, gracious, paternal, considerate, moderately liberal, and controlling. His nature is best expressed in one word as vitality, 2. The moon is a vital planet, and a convertible planet, exerting either a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from the other planets. She is magnetic, feminine, and negative, hence her influence is plastic and mediumistic. In human anatomy, she rules the fluidic system of the body, the foundation of the health and general constitution. This gives us an insight into her character, for as the fluidic system digests, assimilates, and distributes nutriment, so the moon rules the assimilation of mental food by the astral brain, or unconscious mind. Her influence is cool, yielding, informative, ruling the constitutional magnetism, which markedly influences the health. In her influence over the mind, she governs that group of mental factors designated as the domestic urges, embracing time, tune, sublimity, and philoprogenitiveness. Her influence over the strength of the constitution and the general state of the health is marked. She is changeable, negative, dreamy, inoffensive, and lacking in force. Her nature is best expressed in one word as impressionable. 3. Mercury is an intellectual planet, and a convertible planet, exerting either a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from the other planets. He is electric and positive when associated with electric planets, and magnetic and negative when associated with magnetic planets. In human anatomy, he rules the tongue, brain, and nervous system. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the nervous system carries messages to and from the brain to all parts of the body, so Mercury acts as the messenger for the influence of other planets. As the tongue is the most used organ in the expression of thought, Mercury rules writing, talking, traveling, and the manner in which the mental ability is expressed. Thus, while the moon governs the mentality, Mercury indicates the ability, and the channels used, in giving the mind outward expression. And as there are afferent, or ingoing nerves, and efferent, or outgoing nerves, so Mercury influences both perception and expression. He has dominion over the perceptive and comparative group of mental factors designated as the intellectual urges, embracing eventuality, language, calculation, and the recognition of size, weight, form, and color. He is witty, quick, ingenious, intelligent, scientific, volatile, voluble, bright, enterprising, changeable, and persuasive. His nature is best expressed in one word as perception. 4. Venus is a social planet, and a harmonious planet. She is magnetic, feminine, and negative, hence yielding and submissive. In human anatomy, she rules the skin, venous system, and internal generative functions. This gives us an insight into her character, for as the skin is the organ through which feeling is experienced, so Venus is coy, shy, and sensitive. The venous system gently yields to the arterial pressure, and carries the blood back to the heart, and Venus seeks the line of least resistance. The internal generative functions carry out the work of reproduction, and Venus, the planet of love, reproduces through the various arts the mental creations. In social life, she inclines to affection and attraction. In her influence over the mind, she rules that group of mental factors designated as the social urges, embracing, affection, friendship, mirthfulness, conjugality, and inhabitiveness. She is cool, moist, pliable, amiable, receptive, clinging, convivial, harmonious, and artistic. Her nature is best expressed in one word as mildness. 5. Mars is a social planet, and a discordant planet. He is electric, masculine, and positive, hence aggressive and penetrating. In human anatomy, he rules the external sexual organs, the muscles, and the sinews. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the muscles and sinews are the organs of physical activity, so does Mars ever tend to rapid expansion and active effort. As the sexual organism is the seat of strongest desire, so does Mars have dominion over the animal appetites and passions. In social life, he inclines to desire and strife. In his influence over the mind, he rules that group of mental factors designated as the aggressive urges, embracing amativeness, destructiveness, combativeness, and alimentiveness. He is the exact antithesis of Saturn, being diffuse, hot, impulsive, rash, headstrong, and assertive. He is devoid of fear and timidity, is sharp, energetic, thoughtless, free, fierce, intrepid, and unrelenting. His nature is best expressed in one word as energy. 6. Jupiter is a business planet, and a harmonious planet. He is electric, masculine, and positive, hence dignified and bold. In human anatomy, he rules the liver and the arterial system of the body. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the arterial blood distributes warmth and nourishment to the whole body, so Jupiter ever tends to generosity, warmth, and gentle expansion. He is neither the rigid ice of Saturn, nor the fierce fire of Mars, but a genial radiant warmth, imparting happiness to all. In his influence over the mind, he rules that group of mental factors designated as the religious urges, embracing benevolence, good cheer, veneration, hope, reverence, and spirituality. Whatever good Jupiter brings seems to come freely as the result of goodwill and good luck. Saturn gains in business through a careful, systematic effort, while Jupiter gains through patronage and favor. He is cheerful, generous, benevolent, magnanimous, just, charitable, honest, and discriminative. His nature is best expressed in one word as joviality. 7. Saturn is a business planet, and a discordant planet. He is magnetic, masculine, and negative, hence timid and retiring. In human anatomy, he rules the bones, cartilage, and spleen. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the bones are the most solid portions of the body, so does Saturn tend to the practical and concrete. As the spleen is a reservoir of electrical energy, so does Saturn try to collect and hoard the treasures of the earth and the treasures of the mind. In his influence over the mind, he rules that group of mental factors designated as the safety urges, embracing secrecy, acquisitiveness, covetousness, causality, and comparison. He collects the various perceptions that are ruled by Mercury and synthesizes them into conceptions. He thus has rule over the reflective powers and the selfish sentiments. Whatever good comes from his influence is the result of carefully laid plans, plotting effort, subtlety, craft, and cunning. He dislikes to take the initiative, preferring to remain in the dark and accomplish through deception rather than through force. He is solitary, cold, reserved, melancholy, repentant, and fearful. His nature is best expressed in one word as crystallization. 8. Uranus, the higher octave of Mercury, is an intellectual planet and a convertible planet, exerting either a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from the other planets. He has no sex and is electromagnetic, alternately attracting and repelling, hence particularly unreliable where the affections are concerned. In human anatomy, he rules the electromagnetic body. This gives us insight into his character, for as the electromagnetic body is ordinarily imperceptible to the physical senses, yet is the dynamic energy of the body and the source of personal magnetism, so does Uranus direct and control the electrical energies, and confer the ability to understand and utilize the occult forces of nature. In his influence over the mind, he rules that group of mental factors designated as the individualistic urges, embracing independence, originality, inventiveness, and unconventionality. The moons of Uranus travel in a reverse direction to those of the other planets, except Neptune, hence he influences to take a reverse view of life from that commonly accepted, and is thus a radical, and he also inclines to look away from the physical to the things of the astral plane, having a strong influence over clairvoyance and intuition. He is thus the inspirational ESP planet. He is abrupt, erratic, independent, sudden, penetrative, original, occult, scientific, unconventional, and progressive. His nature is best expressed in one word as disruptive. 9. Neptune, the higher octave of Venus, is a social planet and a convertible planet, exerting a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from other planets. He is magnetic and negative in nature. In human anatomy, he rules the astral body. This gives us an insight into his character, for as the astral body is molded by every desire, so does Neptune feel every mental current and psychic influence. As the astral body has the power of leaving the physical body, so does Neptune often depart from the practical and give its attention to unrealizable ideals. His dreamy and mediumistic qualities may lead to fantasy and the belief in grand hopes that are never realized. His moons, like those of Uranus, revolve about him in the reverse direction of those of the other planets. And his influence is to direct the mind from the sordid and the material to lofty spiritual ideals, which when received in suitable soil tend to the development of the conditions and qualities that prove of greatest possible value to the human race. In social life he brings romantic attachments and platonic friendships. In his influence over the mind he rules that group of mental factors designated as the utopian urges, embracing certain high phases of majestic and utopian ideals, and the ability to bring into the realm of objective consciousness what has been seen, felt, heard, and otherwise experienced in the astral world. Neptune is the feeling ESP planet. He is the promoter of worldly schemes, to gain wealth without work. He is subtle, impressionable, psychic, emotional, mild, pleasant, theoretical, and fanciful. His nature is best expressed in one word as visionary. 10. Pluto, the higher octave of the moon, is a social planet, and a convertible planet, expressing either a harmonious or a discordant influence according to the aspects received from other planets. Like the number 10, which starts a new numerical cycle, Pluto is a transitional influence, and more than any other planet may express either of two diametrically opposite qualities. He may express positively and electrically, but his more common influence is negative and magnetic. In human anatomy he rules the spiritual body. In his influence over the human mind he rules that group of mental factors designated as the universal welfare urges. They relate to groups, cooperation, the inner plane, hidden forces, inversion, the inside of things, mass production, and to aggressive spiritual activity. The lower Pluto forces are drastically insidious and destructive, the upper Pluto forces are the finest and most spiritual of all. Not the individual who instigates the action, but the victim of coercion, has this planet prominent. To such events as he attracts, or to which he contributes, he adds a drastic quality. Pluto is the inner plane planet and the planet of transition ESP. His nature is best expressed in one word as cooperation. I have now discussed in some detail mundane houses and planets, and in Chapter 2 the zodiacal signs were considered. To complete our magical formula, Jyoti Vohi, the fourth factor, that of aspects, must also be considered. But as these aspects are explained in Chapter 3 of Course 1, Laws of Occultism, and are fully considered in Chapter 2 of Course 8, Hoary Astrology, I shall here merely enumerate them. 1. The conjunction aspect is formed when two planets occupy the same zodiacal degree. It has an influence comparable to the Sun, being very powerful, convertible in nature, and either harmonious or discordant according to the planets making it. It is the aspect of prominence. 2. The semi-sextal aspect is formed when two planets are 30 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to the moon, being mildly harmonious. It is the aspect of growth. 3. The sextal aspect is formed when two planets are 60 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Venus, being cheerful, bright and strongly harmonious. It is the aspect of opportunity. 4. The square aspect is formed when two planets are 90 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Mars, being energetic, forceful, violent, destructive, and strongly discordant. It is the aspect of obstacle. 5. The trine aspect is formed when two planets are 120 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Jupiter, being jovial, fortunate, constructive, and harmonious in the highest degree. It is the aspect of luck. 6. The inconjunct aspect is formed when two planets are 150 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Neptune, being slightly separative in action, slightly harmonious between harmonious planets, and slightly inharmonious between discordant planets. It is the aspect of expansion. 7. The semi-square aspect is formed when two planets are 45 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Mercury, being vacillating and somewhat inharmonious. It is the aspect of friction. 8. The opposition aspect is formed when two planets are 180 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Saturn, being slowly separative, coldly disintegrative, and discordant in the highest degree. It is the aspect of separation. 9. The Sisky square aspect is formed when two planets are 135 degrees apart in the zodiac. It has an influence comparable to Uranus, being sharply disruptive, sudden, and somewhat discordant. It is the aspect of agitation. 10. The parallel aspect is formed when two planets occupy the same degree of declination, which, like the number 10, is a different plane of influence. It has an influence comparable to Pluto, adding a drastic quality to the effect of other aspects. It is also similar to the conjunction, though more persistent and less precise in action. It is the aspect of intensity.